And a very good morning to Kennedy Warne.
Kia ora, Catherine.
And now, you have been delving into the work of Glenn Albrecht. Who is
he? Well, he's an Australian psychologist. Now, let me just say, you've already mentioned the interview you did with the risk analyst earlier this morning, and I heard that interview, and it was a truly riveting discussion. And the word that came to my mind was unprecedented, and so much now is that word seems to fit the world that we're living in—a world of fire and flood, of a world where the Icelandic president installs a plaque of remembrance where a glacier once flowed in what is perhaps soon to become ice-free land, a world where in a generation coral reefs may be the equivalent vanishing glaciers of the sea. Now, Glenn Albrecht has just released a new book called Earth Emotions, New Words for a New World. He says we may need such words for these new realities and the human emotions that flow from them. Now, some years ago, perhaps even 20, haven't checked, and I think we've talked about this before, he coined the word solastalgia, which is a variant of the well-known emotion of nostalgia. Now, although nostalgia has changed its meaning somewhat, meaning more like affection for past times, it originally was the pain you feel when you're away from your home place. Interestingly, it was coined, that word nostalgia was coined in 1688 to describe the extreme melancholy experienced by Swiss soldiers stationed far from home. Apparently, the mere sound of distant cowbells would bring on bouts of depression. I mean, it sounds funny, but it was not. Depression leading to incapacitating lassitude. And some soldiers even died. They wasted away from refusal to eat. So in those years, nostalgia was considered a pernicious medical condition. But back to solastalgia. So whereas nostalgia is the sorrow you feel when you're away from your home place, solastalgia is the pain you feel when the place you call home changes beyond recognition. Now, Albrecht coined solastalgia to describe the emotions felt by residents in the Upper Hunter Valley in New South Wales as they saw their bucolic landscape decimated by open-cast coal mining. But it's a very apt word for this climate change moment, for, well, more than a moment. Venetians seeing their city of water becoming a city underwater. Californians wondering how habitable their state will be in a year-round fire season. And as you mentioned earlier, the experiences in Australia. Now, so Glenn Albrecht is thinking about those sort of words and to describe the painful realities of the modern moment, but he's also coining more redemptive or positive words. So on the opposite, if you like, the antidote to solastalgia would be what he calls solophilia, which he describes as the love of the totality of our place relationships and a willingness to accept in solidarity and affiliation with others the political responsibility for the health of the earth, our home. And he has other words, another one he calls similarly, endemophilia, the discrete emotion tied to particular special places and love for that which is unique and endemic to them. And we've talked before about what I think is a growing identification of New Zealanders with our endemic, both endemic land forms and rivers and our experience of the sea, and you know, as we see with social media phenomena like the bird of the year, this increased identification with native species. So Albrecht is thinking about the equipping us with ways to describe both the realities that are coming upon us and some of the perhaps emotions and ideas we might have to combat the distress that the changes in the world are producing. So that's his book's called Earth Emotions, New Words for a New World. He has, interestingly, he has a PhD in organicism, a word you might have to look up. I never heard of it before. The idea that society is or is like a natural organism. So very much like Gaia, very much like the idea that that life and its myriad ecosystemic connections is there, and we can be nourished by our physical expressions of aroha for the earth.
So that's an interesting one. I wonder too if part of the adaptation that is going to have to happen, I'm thinking even here in New Zealand, if we're going to be planting trees back where they once were, but they may well be different trees, we're going to have to get used to our landscapes that we love. This is going to lead into your next piece about familiarity and how powerful that is.
Yes.
I'm already accepting that many landscapes that I love in many ways because they are so bare, or sometimes because they have been dry. I'm a South Islander, I'm a mainlander, you know. I'm accepting that they are going to look different. They are probably going to have to look different if we're going to plant a lot of trees in a lot of places. And yeah, it's a bit of a mental clash. At the same time, I support the removal of wilding pines to accepting that our landscapes are going to have to change. We need to be able to do this healthily, not just in a grief sense. We need to be able to, in many ways, accept that our lives, including what we look at around us, will be different because it needs to be, and we need to find a healthy way to adapt to that.
Well, I totally agree, but part of me thinks good luck with that. In the current age of extreme polarization, of people taking positions that don't allow for a healthy middle ground, that don't allow for a kind of reasonable decision based on what's going to be the best future.
People must be able to express that frustration. People must be able to oppose things that they don't believe should be happening. That it would be unhealthy not to do that. But I guess for our own states of mind and well-being, we have to learn to find ways to, it's like the stages of grief, isn't it?
Yes.
Resist, deny, bargain, accept. And that, because our countries are, for multiple reasons, going to look and become very different. And part of the practical adaptation will also be an emotional adaptation.
Very much so. But I think the problem with the stages of grief thing is that aren't we all rather stuck on like the first or the second, you know, anger, and that ends it, and we end up with a zero-sum problem
of clashing ideologies. I don't know if
you
heard Stephen earlier talking about his experience in Australia just this past week.
A tipping point.
This has been sort of getting clearer and clearer in my mind lately. I can't help thinking a lot of this extreme polarisation around the world over everything, but particularly in our politics, it's almost like an act of nature. It's almost like the status quo is going to have to yield to big and probably quite rapid change. And it's like this sort of energy that surrounds the last stages of the status quo holding. And what we need to do is to try and navigate this process naturally as well. I don't know if you could find something in nature that compares. Don't say a wildfire. But there's this everybody and cumulatively is adjusting to the reality, whether we choose it or whether it happens to us, of like an epochal change. And this division is part of the psychological processing of that.
Sure. Well, I'm going to skip the thing and go straight to something that's very pertinent to that, and that is the lesson of the gourd. Now, look, I'll just quickly refresh this. A few weeks ago I was in Gisborne. I talked about a wonderful new sculpture to represent and honour the ancestor Te Māro. And he was a gardener. Now, the sculpture that's 10 metres high, weighs 12 tonnes, standing on Kaiti Hill, this ancestor, Te Māro, is holding a gourd. And I didn't sort of see it at the time, but when I've read about it, Nick Tupara, the creator of the sculptures, has said that it's to honour a particular ancestor, Hene Putatehue, who was said to have collected all the anger and anxiety in the community and stored it in her hue, her gourd, which she then used to play beautiful music. Now, I'm just leaping metaphorically here to saying that this is a time for more timaros, more peacemakers, more gourd holders, who gather the outrage and anxiety and who find ways of processing that and finding the emotional resonance that you have talked about and turning it into a music of understanding and a music that moves us forward rather than leaves us stranded in polarized discourse and debate. So
what a beautiful
it is beautiful, isn't it?
I'm sure it is. Yeah,
it is. And there's nearby at the Cook's Landing site are some giant concrete gourds to make sure you get the message. And also it's a time for more tupaias. You know, this guy navigator and priest who travelled with Cook and was an intermediary who smoothed the jagged edges of cultural encounter. And as discourse is getting more jagged, and so I think we need tupaias and we need gourd holders to help us process that and not leave us in this state of constant unprofitable outrage.
Lovely. Thank you, Kennedy.
Nice talking to you.
As always, talk again next time. Kennedy Warne.